My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the Bad Time Radio podcast. This time I have a special for you. It's just me and Brandon. Brandon and I. So we're going to be talking about a movie that is near and dear to my heart, Prometheus. I don't really remember why. It was some stupid chat we had. Somehow Prometheus came up. Oh yeah, Lawrence was giving me shit for things I always argue about. Apparently Prometheus is one of the things I always argue about, because my contention is that it's a great movie, and I feel like its inconsistencies are overblown.
Interesting. We'll see about that.
Oh, yeah, all right. I mean, I watch movies, but I really enjoyed it. So what would you recommend this movie, Brandon?
Overall, yeah, I would. I'd still recommend it.
Okay, so it sounds like there are some maybe some points you didn't like about it, but overall, still good. And I, of course, highly recommend it. I think it's an awesome movie. Okay, I'm going to roll for summary. Let me figure out how to do that.
D6. What's DC? Just kidding. Hmm? What's DC? Like,
okay. Anyways. Would you rather be even or odd?
Odd.
We got a one. All right.
Oh, man, it's just my fate.
Yeah,
it do kind summary of, like 90% yeah. of the time.
The summary gods hate you.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. We just want to start.
I will interrupt you. Yeah, okay. I'll interrupt you constantly. I don't want to do the short summary.
All right. I'll do
but not super long either, but. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I did just watch it yesterday. I will do my best to actually get the summary correct. There are some confusing, like, back and forth jumping scenes that I might mix up. But let's see. So the easy part is that we start on a planet with like a nice like dark blue filter over everything, or like going through like rivers and forests, and we come to this waterfall, and there's like a spaceship that appears through the clouds, is hovering over this. And then we see like a guy in a robe walking up to the waterfall, and he looks up at the spaceship, and the spaceship starts to like turn and go up, you know, into the atmosphere. And he takes out this little cup and takes off his robe. He's like fucking crazy jacked, like fucking negative percent body fat.
Of course he is. I mean,
and he's
how could he not be, right? Like
full albino, completely hairless, his eyes are completely black, and I mean, it's hard to tell with scale, but I mean, he looks like he's like 8 feet tall. Anyways, he takes out this cup, and it's just like this bubbling kind of black liquid, like stuff is moving in it, but it's not like bugs or something. It's just like the liquid is moving, and he takes that shot, and then you know, it kind of hits him, and he's like, oh, that was not good. And he starts to kind of dissolve. Like, he has this black stuff running all over his body that's like decomposing him. And they do like this shot of inside his DNA where it's like breaking apart, and his leg collapses, he tumbles into the waterfall, and he goes in the water and just kind of dissolves. And so that's that. And then we cut to the late 21st century, where some archaeologists are digging in a cave in Scotland, and they find this cave painting that they're super stoked about. People bowing down before this really tall person who's pointing at these like five or six orbs. It looks like orbs in the sky, kind of a thing. Not quite like a constellation, because they look more like planets. They're like actually big. They're really stoked about that. Then I think it just cuts to the spaceship
With
David,
so.
Right? Because then it's only explained what that means when they're at the meeting. So
yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and it sounds like I'm not making sense, like this isn't making progress, but this is like literally how the scenes go. So then they cut to the spaceship. that's in outer space cruising. And inside is Michael Fassbender as David, and he's monitoring these like stasis chambers. He's learning different languages. He's like watching these videos of ancient languages, Mesopotamian stuff. I don't know what it actually is. That's covered more later. He's like riding a bicycle around their basketball court and like, you know, one-handed half court shot.
You know, was that basketball thing like a reference? Do you remember that one Alien movie where Sigourney Weaver's like playing basketball? Nah, maybe that's ridiculous.
I mean, I don't see how it's a reference other than, yeah, maybe they were both playing basketball, but like, no bicycle or anything.
No, as soon as you see Michael Fassbender, you just assume he's going to be like borderline evil. Like,
right.
Just because it's Michael Fassbender.
And then it like doesn't help that he's an android and like,
no, not at all.
Was the android evil in like every movie that they'd previously been in or just the first one? I don't know.
Was he evil in the first one?
Well, I mean, I don't evil is a stretch, but like he was, you know, working for the company and he was not interested in
helping
the crew survive or doing the whole medical, like, what's it called? Like quarantine. He was interested in helping them get the sample back to the corporation for studying it. And Sigourney Weaver wanted to kill it or something.
Yeah. Androids seem to be lawful evil pretty consistently.
Yeah. So, I mean, that plus Michael Fassbender is like, yeah, for sure.
And the basketball. And, like, this guy's evil. Yeah.
And, like, the way he kind of, like, studies these language tapes, and he's also, like, imitating. He also watches some, like, old, like, I don't know, these, like, 40s or 50s.
Yeah, he's obsessed with this movie, Lawrence of Arabia, which apparently has a dude who, like, works with some tribes people. And I was reading that that somehow translates to David's psyche, because he models himself after Lawrence, like his hairstyle and everything.
Yeah, so he's watching that like while he's like combing his hair and like kind of modeling himself out, and he keeps repeating this one line that the guy says that I don't even know what he did. Like I thought he was doing some kind of a trick, but it seemed like he just pricked his finger or something.
And, yeah, and then it's a scene where his trick is to put out a match with his fingers.
Okay.
And the trick is that you just let it hurt you.
And he's like, oh, I don't know how you do that. It hurts. And he's like, and what he says is the trick is not minding that it hurts. And David repeats that. And that's a little bit sketchy because he's like an android that feels nothing. And he's like kind of reveling in that.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah.
So anyways, oh, and then the other creepy thing he does right off the bat is that he's watching the female. So the two people that discovered the cave painting are on this trip, and one of them is a girl and one's a guy. The girl's Dr. Shaw. I think her name's Elizabeth. Yeah, her first name's Elizabeth. And the other guy is Charles Holloway. Anyways, he's watching the girl's dreams in the stasis thing, which is like she's dreaming about when she was a kid with her dad, and they're talking about her mom dying and did she go to heaven? And she says, well, how do you know that? And he says, that's what I choose to believe. Anyway, so that he gets that little insight into her character, you know, spying on her dreams. So then it's kind of weird because like this alarm goes off while he's just walking around doing chores that says like they're at the destination threshold and everybody needs to wake up or whatever. And he seems surprised. Like, I mean, I don't know how.
Yeah, that like, didn't make
an obvious time that they were going to arrive, but
like you'd be monitoring mission progress the whole time, I would imagine.
Yeah, especially because when Charlize Theron asks him how long it's been, he says it down to the minute. So it's like, pretty sure he knows exactly the time is and what's happening. But
is the idea that he just lost track of time and he was like an android having fun. I'm not sure what that was. Like either that or the mission didn't involve telling him. That doesn't make sense, though.
Yeah, I just found it really odd because I feel like they're probably going at a constant speed. And there would just be like an exact arrival time already calculated. And I would think it would have made more sense if he was like waiting outside this, like he walks and like arrives right outside the stasis door and waits for like 2 seconds. And then the thing goes off that they're arrived and the door is open and he just wakes everybody up instantly. That would be more fitting with like the rest of the scenes where, he's like very precise, like the whole, yeah, the basketball scene. But anyways, that's minor thing that I just didn't understand. So then he does wake everybody up. Dr. Shaw is having like sickness from the stasis, and other people are, you know, scroggy and whatever. They kind of start introducing the other cast here, obviously, now that everybody's like awake and moving around. They have this ginger punk rock looking guy that's like drinking his bowl of slop or whatever, and some guy, you know, some nerdy white guy in glasses like walks up to him all cheery like, oh hi, I'm here for whatever the fuck I'm doing. And he's like, you know, ginger punk rock guy is like, I'm not here to be your friend, I'm here to make money. Got it? He's like, sure.
Which kind of makes me feel like this whole expedition's kind of put together haphazardly if you have people like this, you know, like who will not really get along with everybody. But that is neither here nor there. Maybe it is, but anyway.
Yeah, but that begins one of the inconsistencies already. That these guys actually end up being best buds. They're like, it's them against the world later on.
But, you know, like, they were also it was almost like a circumstance.
Yeah, for sure.
More so than their choice.
Yeah. I don't think there's any other big, like, character revealing things.
Yeah, here. We can skip the details. They go for the big.
Yeah, then they go to the meeting. And Charlize Theron's character is basically like announced as like the person in charge from the perspective of the Wayland Corporation that's funding this mission. And they show a hologram of Peter Wayland, who says, like, if you're watching this, that I'm already dead, and says that like these two people found these things that I think is like going to answer the big question about like where did we come from and yada yada. So he hands the floor over to them. And they show all these cave paintings they found from across the earth, different times, and different places. So there's like pretty plausible that they had no communication, that there was no reason for that. They basically independently painted these identical things with the five orbs in the sky or in the same configuration or whatever. And, through, you know, astronomy or whatever, they found this place that they think these five orbs represent. And that there's a sun similar to Earth's sun, and there's a planet that they think would support life. I don't think they explained how they decided. Or I think that's actually the moon of a planet that they think can support life. So then everybody is like pretty skeptical. They're like, well, how do you know? Like, how do you know that that's what that means? And she, you know, spits out the line from the dream that that's what I choose to believe. So that's all.
And everyone laughs.
Yeah, everybody laughs. Everybody's like, thinks this is crazy. Like, yeah, like they're just on this mission.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, have you been saying this the whole time and getting this reaction? Because I feel like you'd stop saying that. But, you know, I mean, she's a believer and she doesn't care, but still. I mean, no, it's good. I take it back.
I mean,
I take back everything.
I feel like that was okay. Like, that was kind of her moment to be like an assertive leader to just like be confident, I guess.
I agree. She's confident. She has faith.
Yeah, because honestly, like, I liked her more than the Charles Holloway guy.
Oh,
like,
he's a dick.
Fucking big baby the whole time. Fucking everything, but it's actually obnoxious.
He's a huge dick.
Yeah, like, he's just, I wish I could remember what it was, but like, basically the first thing that David says, he's just like a dick about. And it's like, what? You don't even know him yet.
Like, he's like, he called him boy, right? You're coming with us, boy.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, man, you're an asshole.
Yeah. So everybody, you know, like you said, like, this is kind of just like a thing that's thrown together last minute. Nobody really knows why they're here. They're just getting paid and they're like, sure, fine. Like, nobody seems to believe in this, but, you know, we're here. Let's do it.
Which, I mean, just going on the first interstellar mission just to get paid is crazy.
Yeah. It's hard to say like what the sort of state of the world's technology is at this point.
That is true.
Because they seem like really nonchalant about going across the universe or galaxy or however.
But Vickers was like, did anyone die in stasis?
I mean, so that's a risk.
That's like that. That is a ludicrous prop. Like, what money amount is worth it for this mission? I get Shaw's motivation for going, but like, for money is dicey.
Yeah.
But I guess there are some greedy motherfuckers out there.
Yeah. But then I think they start entering the atmosphere, and the way that they're like, the one dude's like flying the ship standing up doesn't make any fucking sense, because it's not like a futuristic thing to do. Like, if there's turbulence, you just fucking fall over. Like, sit in a seat with the fucking harness. That bothered me. And then, you know, they get below the clouds and they're kind of looking for stuff. They're scanning for, I don't know, metal and whatever. And Holloway just randomly sees this like straight line, like a path or a pipe or something. And he's like, he says, oh, God doesn't build in straight lines, like down there. And so they head over there, and there's like this, they keep calling it a pyramid, but it's like a dome kind of thing, I think.
Yeah. It's like a big bubble
that does have a path leading up to it. And so they land outside of that. And they want to go now. And, you know, the captain's like, oh, there's only 6 hours left of daylight. Leave us till tomorrow. And that thing about the Christmas tree, but that's not important. Anyways, because then he says, think about it, it's Christmas. I want to open my presents, which just connects to the fact that the captain was trying to make it be Christmas. But anyways, so they get all suited up, and they have some kind of awkward moments in the little shuttle car over there. The two guys that, like, you know, the you know, ginger punk rock guy and the guy that was trying to be his friend, they like bump helmets because their helmets are all bubbly in the close space. Anyways, then they get there. Oh, they're doing some atmospheric readings, and they say that like it's almost like Earth, except the CO2 levels are high, so they would still die without their helmets. Then they get inside this place, and there's like water dripping down and like coming, there's like steam coming out of this hole in the ground, and they like reread the atmosphere, and it's like there's no more CO2, like, no more toxic levels of CO2. It's like exactly like Earth. So they're like, Dr. fucking dickhead Holloway is like, oh, I'm just gonna take off my helmet then. And everyone's like, no, like, fucking don't do that. What are you doing? And he just takes it off and he breathes and is like, oh yeah, it's safe. Like, okay, well, we're all taking our helmets off right now. And it's like, it's more than just like carbon dioxide. It could be like a problem. Like, you're going to this, I don't know. It's just like viruses, anything else.
It's a crazy decision. I guess that the idea is that he's just so,
I mean, also the fact that it reckless. Functions as like eye protection and like, I don't know.
Radiation protection, and I assume.
Yeah, maybe.
A lot of things, you know.
So it's just weird. And it's weird that everybody follows suit. Like, fucking, he takes it off. It's like, fine, you'd be an idiot.
Okay. Like,
I'm not taking it off. Like, whatever. I guess the only minor consolation is that it saves their oxygen stores, but I don't think that's an issue because they don't end up staying there all that long. Anyways, so then they're walking around this place. The ginger punk rock guy is actually like a geologist / cartologist, because he has these little floating orbs that can fly around, and they're like LIDAR. They have spinning lasers that are scanning, like 3D scanning everything, and they can just float because it's the future. And he sends them off, and they just like explore on their own, and they start 3D mapping this place. And they just kind of like pick a tunnel to walk down, I guess. And this part I'm a little unclear on what happens. Somehow they activate a hologram. I don't remember if they do anything, but they activate a hologram where they see these like large, tall people with these like, I don't know, kind of like Cthulhu elephant kind of faces.
Was David pressing?
Did he press something? Maybe
to do that, or I don't remember now.
He definitely pressed stuff later to open the door.
Yeah,
but I don't remember if he pressed something to activate that. And it freaks them all like the fuck out. But they start following them. They're following these holograms that are like running down the hallway, and they turn and they're following them. They see one of the guys like fall over on the ground and like a door close, and it looks like it would have decapitated him. And sure enough, when the hologram goes away, it ends, and they go over and they see a corpse like that was decapitated. And they're like, holy shit. And this freaks the ginger punk rock geologist guy like right the fuck out. And he's like scared now and he wants to leave. And he has this whole spiel about like, oh, like I'm a geologist. I can't contribute in the big fucking dead guy department or whatever. So I want to go back to the ship. So they say, fine. And the other guy who's I think is a biologist says, yeah, that, yeah, he's going to go with him. So they both leave. And that's amazing. We'll get to that later. But everybody else stays. And David is like, they notice these like hieroglyphic type cuneiform, whatever, markings above the door. And they ask if David can read it because he's been studying all these languages in an attempt to like have some hope of communicating with them. And he thinks he can read it. And he like, he doesn't really say anything, but he just gets up on this ladder. And he goes up and starts pushing buttons and opens the door. And Dr. Shaw is like, whoa, don't do that. Like, we don't know what's in there, like, or whatever. And he's just like, oops, it's like, it's already done.
Yeah. This sort of gives you an indication of his mindset. Yeah. He's just like,
nope, fuck, we're just pressing this on. Fuck you. I don't care if it's dangerous or I need to do some other prep or whatever. I'm opening this. And also he didn't tell anybody what it said. He just opened it somehow. So then, yeah, on the other side of the door is like a decapitated head. And it's like, they said that it's really well preserved, but I think they're maybe misunderstanding the fact that it's a helmet. It does end up being well preserved, but I don't think they can see that yet. So anyways, they comment on it being well preserved. And in the room, there's all these like jars that are maybe like 3 feet tall and kind of look like metal. Standing up like all throughout this room. And there's also a giant human head statue or human looking head. But of course, like the bodybuilder from the first scene is also human looking. So it's obviously them. And I think they're just kind of wandering around and looking at this stuff. David goes to touch one of the jars and Shaw tells him not to.
And he's like,
it's like, right, bitch, I don't need to tell me. But something, what happens that makes them leave? Oh, the storm
a storm, and the mural starts changing on the ceiling.
Okay, yeah, so this part is fucking weird. So they're also looking at the ceiling, and there's like this mural, and it was really hard for me to see like what this mural was supposed to be, because it looked like it was more like a sculpted mural, like it wasn't actually painted, like it was just kind of 3D sculpted into the wall. But anyways, it was of something, and they notice that it's like changing. It was like black stuff moving over it or whatever. And Dr. Shaw instantly thinks that they're affecting the atmosphere by being in there, and that's what's causing that, which is fair, but that's a little bit of a weird how quickly she jumps to that conclusion. And so then she's concerned about bagging the head and preserving it so that they can get it back to the ship to study it, so it doesn't just like, they didn't trigger some kind of thing that's going to make it instantly decay. So they're doing that. And at the same time, the ship sees it like some big storm, like big sandstorm. I mean, they say silica. And also when they show the storm, it's like really big chunks of like rock or something. So they're like, they need to get out of there. They need to bag the head and they need to move. And David is like, yeah, I'm taking one of these jars. So he like cracks open something that like is, I don't know, shooting liquid nitrogen or something at it. It's freezing it, which I'm not sure. I don't know. That's like his mini way of preserving it, because then he just throws it in his duffel bag.
I remember why they were in a panic, actually. It's because Vickers was like, if you're not back in, what was it, like 5 minutes or 10 minutes or something,
right,
I'm closing the doors.
Yeah, she's like 10 or 15 minutes. She's closing the doors. But I mean, also that storm would be like really fucking bad for them to be out there.
Yeah,
so they'd either have to stay in the pyramid or get to the ship. And I don't think they want to stay there. So, yeah. So they bag the head. David has his jar, and they get back on their four wheelers and their stuff, and they're heading back. And they just, I guess I'll cover this part first. They do just barely make it back, but Shaw drops the head and it rolls just outside the thing, and she jumps out to get it, but then the door is closing. And she gets fucking blasted by the storm, because they literally like seconds away from making it anyways. So she gets blasted by the storm, and she gets like thrown up against one of the like landing gear pieces of the ship, and the door closes. So it's like, fuck. Then I think Holloway does jump out after her. So then they're like both out there getting fucked by the sandstorm. It's like super, super powerful. Then David opens like a side door and he like hooks himself to this wench kind of thing.
Wench.
Well, I mean, that's like what it is, right? It reels. It's a cable that is powered and can reel him in, right? Winch. Sorry, winch.
A winch.
Right. Okay. So he hooks himself to this winch, and he jumps out there and he hooks them and he goes back. Which, like, the physics of it are probably fair, but it looks hilarious how he's just like bouncing and floating back on this table that's like completely taut.
And he does it so effortlessly compared to the humans that I think he's like secretly glorying in the fact that he's like so much more capable than them.
Yeah, probably.
That's my thinking.
Yeah, and then this is another interesting moment of like there's like a contrast between Holloway's reaction and David's reaction. Like Holloway, like once they get back inside, he instantly like chews out Shaw about why would you do that? Like do the whole jumping out after the head thing is like you just like risked the mission. Not to mention you almost killed yourself. And he's like worried, but he's also like yelling at her. And David just says like, "Are you all right?" And she's like, "Yeah." And she just like kind of looks grateful at him, and she's kind of like ignoring Holloway, which I thought was funny. So then they're back, and the captain's like, "Are those other two guys like back?" And they're like, "No, didn't they already get back? Like they left way before us." And they're like, "No." So it turns out the fucking mapping expert got lost, even though he has like a 3D map of everything. And these other people just like ran out in a hurry and they didn't get lost. I don't know. And also before the storm, they had fine radio contact with the ship. So they could have like also had the ship guide them because the ship is getting this map like beamed back to it as well. No idea how they're supposed to get lost other than like the plot needs them to be separated and discover what they're about to discover.
Those two are just dumb. I think it's...
I guess, but like, it does, I don't know, it doesn't make sense. It's like...
I know, it's a little ridiculous that they would get lost at all.
Like literally, they made the fucking mapping guy get lost. Like, why is that who they may get lost?
He took an online course in mapping.
Like, I think they maybe... Like, honestly, the doctor, they didn't really need her the rest of the time, because David seemed like basically as competent about like medicine and biology as her, and... Mm. So they could have had her freak out, and she was there. They could have had her freak out and leave, and maybe also still take the biologist because, yeah, neither of them would like know how to read the 3D map correctly or whatever. You could argue that, and they didn't want to radio the ship. But like the fucking mapping guy getting lost is stupid. So anyways, they're wandering around and talking about how they don't know
what to do. They didn't seem to have any like super – they didn't seem to have like technology – they didn't seem to have any displays with them, you know.
That's true, but they could have asked the ship. Like, I don't know why they didn't.
Right, they could have asked the ship because the ship was definitely getting the information. But it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of nice, you know. Like a lot of times, sci-fi movies have like all kinds of technology. Like their helmets would just show them where to go. But these guys are, even despite their technology, they're sort of on their own.
Yeah. And so they're wandering around. And they find a big pile of dead bodies. And it's like, oh, this is much better than one. And so they also, sometime during the storm, get told by the captain that like one of the sensors that's like mapping and got stuck at like a door that was blocking it, it's pinging that it found a life form, or that it sensed a life form, but then it went away. And that whole exchange between them is also stupid. I feel like the guy that's the biologist is like being an idiot. He says like, "Ping, what do you mean ping? Life form, what do you mean it sensed the life form?" Like it's really odd. Like it's really plain what the captain is saying. Like there's no misunderstanding. Even like, I get that he's freaking out, but I think that he's just like saying stupid things. I don't know how else to put it. The guy just seems like an idiot. And even more so with what comes up next. So then they're like trying to go away from where that bot is, so they don't want to encounter whatever this supposed life form is. And so they're going in the opposite direction. They end up back in the room. They basically circle back because they end up back in the room that they had run away from when everyone else was exploring, the room with the jars and everything. And now that they're in there, it's like really foggy. All the jars have this like black goo on top of them. I think previously only the one that David was looking at had that black goo on top of it, which looks just like what the bodybuilder guy had drank in the beginning, by the way. And so now it's everywhere. There's like, there's like little puddles and it's foggy. And
it was like a little worm, right? Or was it when David put his finger close to it, or was it not?
No, I think that's the, I think you might be thinking of the footprint thing where when they step, they showed someone step and lift their foot and out of the dirt, like a worm is crawling.
Yes. Yeah.
And also later the eyeball thing. That's all separate, but related. So I think the only thing that happens in here is that they're just chilling. They have little like aluminum foil blankets, whatever those are. And they see something move in the water and they kind of freak out. But then it's like this penis snake looking thing that comes up out of the water, for lack of a better term. And the biologist is instantly like, oh, so cute. So pretty.
I wonder why they chose to stay in this creepy vase room.
Yeah, like, I don't know what about that made them feel safe.
I'd be like, I don't know if I, that was me. I'd be like, I don't know what's in the vases. I'm not staying here. Like,
yeah.
Anyway,
and like, yeah, just why is it all like foggy and that like black goopy stuff on everything? I don't know. Doesn't seem like a nice place to chill. But yeah, so this like penis snake comes up out of the water. It's also like albino looking. And yeah, the biologist is just like instantly infatuated with this thing. Not at all concerned that it might be dangerous. And I'd say it's like, I mean, it's basically like the size of a king cobra. And he's like talking to it. And the ginger geologist guy is like, what are you doing? And he's like, no, it's okay. Like, he says something about it being a girl. And he's like, how do you know it's a girl? He's like, oh, look, she's a lady. And and it like opens a little flap, like it opens up its head flap thingies to be like wide again, kind of like a looking like a king cobra, and kind of like hisses at him, and he like backs, he like, you know, jumps back for a second, but then he's still like trying to fucking pet this thing, and then it fucking when he gets close, it like jumps onto his hand and wraps around him like a constrictor. And he's like, okay, this is like scary. Get it off of me now. And he's like, dude, I'm not touching that thing. Like, why are you going close to it? Like, this is your fucking problem. So then it starts like getting tighter and tighter. And it's like starts breaking his arm. And he wants, and it does like actually snap his arm, snap his elbow backwards, basically. And he wants the ginger guy to like cut it. So he cuts it and they get the whole acid blood thing. Like, oh, because it's alien, right? It goes on his helmet, starts like melting his helmet as if it's like plastic, onto his face, which was pretty cool. And then
Brandt's favorite part of the movie.
It's the first good part of the movie. And then it, then because like it broke his arm and like tore his suit and everything, the snake thing like lets go and it like dives inside his suit, goes up into his helmet, like curls around him, curled around his head and his neck, and then like dives into his throat, and he kind of like, you know, is paralyzed by that apparently and falls over. So it's like a little, you know, face hugger vibe going on there, but a little bit weird. I think that's the end of them.
Now. And just a note, the dude whose helmet melted fell face first into a puddle of goo.
True. So I don't remember what happens next on the ship.
Oh, they're operating on the head. And they're like, oh, right. Yeah, this thing is so excellently preserved. Oh, wait, it's a helmet. They pop it open like a crab. And then there's a head in there.
Yeah.
It starts bubbling away.
Well, no, it doesn't start bubbling. This is weird. Doesn't. They like, apparently they just are like, oh, hey, if we just fucking shock it with electricity, it'll probably come back to life, right? Because that's obviously how things work. So they stick a little electrode in his ear, or I don't know, his throat or whatever, in his head. And they're like 30 amps, 40 amps, 50 amps. They like up it. And then he starts to like, you know, wink his eye twitches or something. And they're like, okay, like turn it back down, like it's overloading it. It starts to smell apparently, and they turn it completely off, but he's still just like tweaking out like he's having a seizure, and his head starts to kind of bubble up, and they're freaking out. So they completely take it out. They tell tell David to like shut it back in the little container they had for it. And like a few seconds after that door closes, it just explodes. So that whole thing doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Did it? Yeah. Was maybe the chamber like some sort of stasis chamber? And once the head was removed from stasis, it just like accelerated aging, or I can't think of any reason why it would just explode.
Maybe, but I mean, why did they introduce the electrode idea? Like, if that was just going to happen because it was removed from stasis, then it could have just happened like throughout them operating on it and probing it and whatever. And it,
but I mean, at the beginning of it, weren't they like there was like some weird black movement in the skin?
It didn't have movement, but it did have like like black or pimples or something on him, which they said was. Again, I don't know how they jumped to this conclusion.
Mutating,
but like,
right?
They said it was new cells.
Oh. So maybe it's been infected?
Maybe.
I don't know. Because, okay, so the person who's running... I don't know. Anyway, yeah. It explodes.
It's weird, and it explodes. But they did take a sample of DNA, and they find out that it's like a match for humans. Or at least like a very close match, like, you know, gorillas and humans.
Yeah, then you realize that these dudes are humanity's forefathers.
Yeah, so even though they didn't get to talk to anybody because they haven't found anybody alive, they're like basically confirmed their theory. So then I think it cuts to Holloway and he's like sulking and drinking because like I didn't get to ask
any questions.
Yeah, he's like being really grumpy about it. And
David goes to visit somebody, but you kind of know who it is.
That, yeah, you're right. Because the try harder thing, I think, links to what he does.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So he puts on the little helmet that lets him peer into someone's stasis thing, and he's standing by a stasis thing that's like in its own room, a stasis tube that's in its own room, and he's talking, and he comes out of that, and like Charlize Theron confronts him and wants to know what quote unquote what he said, and he's like, I don't think he'd want me to tell you, and she's like, basically tries to outrank him or something, and he says, try harder. And she gets like upset by that, and then they go their separate ways. So then David goes and he starts inspecting what's in the jar, and there's these four glass tubes that are kind of in some kind of gelatinous material as well. But inside the glass tubes, it's like some sort of mixture of the black stuff, but also just some clear water that's maybe like preserving it or something, but it's not mixing. I can't remember what the chemistry word for that is, like not soluble or something. And so he cracks it open and he takes a little drop on his finger, and here he says, great things have small beginnings or something like that. It's a little weird. It just seems like an assumption that this is some kind of like biological mutating thing, like how he decides to do this experiment. I mean,
this is the point that starts a lot of arguments, because I feel like he didn't know, right? And he also just didn't care.
Right, definitely
about the person he's
he doesn't care about. And I think it's fair to say that he doesn't care, and he's just like, let's just see what happens, like fuck it. Like the dude that he talked to like says try harder, he wants results, so I'm just gonna do something, and you know, that'll be some information. Like I don't care if it fucks somebody
out. Alien goo, let's do it.
Alien goo, let's do it. Exactly. So he has this little drop on his finger, then he goes and finds Holloway, who's getting shit-faced. And he offers to give him another drink because he's like, oh, I'm afraid you're running low. And so he makes him a drink and he like taps his finger. It's fucking weird. I mean, I guess because the guy's like super drunk, he doesn't notice it. But he basically spikes his drink in front of him instead of like away from him, if you know what I mean. Like normally you'd like pour it with, you know, your back to somebody.
Yeah.
And then that's when you spike it and then you hand it to them. He like pours it And then as he hands it to him, he does this thing where he holds it between his thumb and middle finger, and his index finger dips into the glass and touches the center of the drink. And it's like, what the fuck?
But he's talking to Holloway, and he's like, how far would you go to discover blah, blah, blah? And Holloway's like,
yeah,
all the way. And then he does it.
Yeah.
So it's almost, I mean, it's not really asking permission, but I mean, I feel like that's how he's taking it.
I mean, I feel like, it's weird. It feels like that's how the movie presents it. But I feel like based on what we said before, like David would have done this either way. So it's like weird that he's like
that he would even
fake asking for permission kind of
thing. Yeah.
But
yes.
But then there's also the moment before this where, that I did like of, like Fassbender's, you know, general portrayal of David is, that they're talking about like meeting his maker and like, oh, David says, why do you think your people made me? And Holloway says, who made you? Because we could. And he has like a little snarky smirk. Like, I don't know. He's trying to like make that a fuck you again, basically. And David kind of like just has like a subtle shift in his expression where he's, instead of like having a gentle smile, he's just like neutral. Yeah, and then like right after that, I think is when he asks him about how far would he go, and then he spikes his drink and he's like, "Get fucked." So then they part ways. Holloway goes back to Shaw, and Shaw shows him the material about the fact that they found the DNA match, and
then they bang it out.
Yeah, then they like get in his argument about creating life, and she can't get pregnant or whatever. Then they just, you know, bang it out and everything's all good, right? Then they get woken up by a call because the other people never came back, and they're going to send out a party to look for them. And Holloway is like looking in the mirror, and his eyes are like kind of weirdly bloodshot, and I think this is like a little worm or something is like moves in his eye. Is that,
yeah,
that's what happens, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And so he kind of freaks out, but he's like, I'm not going to say anything. Yeah. Obviously a good
course of action. I'm not sick.
Yeah. Denial. And so, yeah, they get all suited up and they go out looking for them. They find the guy that had the alien down his throat. This gets kind of like, we're a little weird, but a bunch of stuff happens. So they radio back in that like, he's still alive, right? And they need to get him medical help or whatever. But then as they're like doing this, Holloway like falls over, he can't stand up, and he asks like Shaw to look at him because like, he knows now he's like admitting, he's like, he knows he's sick. So, like, just tell me how bad it is. And she like, won't say anything. And she's just radioing in that they need like, to prepare for like quarantine, medical support, whatever, and they need to go back now. And yeah, he looks worse. He's like getting pale, and I think he's getting like some kind of black veiny stuff on his face.
Dude, you look bad.
Let's see. So then Charlize Theron hears this, and she's like, I don't fucking think so. We're not bringing some strange infection on the ship. Without saying that. So she just goes to get suited up and goes and gets her flamethrower to stand guard at the door. But they're heading back with those two.
Did the snake jump into the woman doctor? Or am I making that up?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I'm just making it up.
I think that's
the end of the snake.
Yeah, testing.
I thought it jumped out of the dead body into her mouth. I don't know. I might be hallucinating this memory.
Well, to be honest, I can't remember if it had already released him when they, oh yeah. That's right. She says she sees movement in the esophagus and it jumps at her, but then I think it just like,
it doesn't actually go down her throat.
No, I don't think it goes down her throat.
It's just like,
cause she's fine the rest of the movie. I know that for sure.
Just gives her a little love tap and then bounces.
Yeah. Just kind of jump scares them.
It would have made more sense for it to die. Well, no, it didn't lay an egg.
I mean,
so, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Just, the facehuggers die, but
it just went straight down his throat and ate its way out, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird because they're using like xenomorph like concepts, but then they are changing everything about, they're not making anything the same. So like, I don't know if this thing was supposed to lay an egg or if it's just like eating him, because yeah, then it just like leaves. Whereas like facehuggers would.
Yeah. Maybe they only turn in facehuggers once they've made it with a human or engineer.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. But because like some of the other evolution that happens in this movie is like also inconsistent with xenomorphs, so I don't think it's like necessarily the same strain yet. But anyways, they're heading back to the ship with the two sick people, and they get there, and Charlize Theron is at the door with a flamethrower, saying like he's not coming on the ship, and he's like, you know what, just fucking roast me, like something bad's happening, like just put me down, basically, which is like kind of shitty. Like I'm pretty sure they had regular guns, but so instead she just fucking roasts him, and that must have been awful. And then Dr. Shaw is like super upset, and I don't remember if she passes out or if she just gets like a sick feeling right there, but she gets taken to the medical bay.
She just wakes up in a med bay.
Right, because then she gets woken up when Dave is taking her across. Because she freaks out that he's touching her. She's like, well, where am I? And so they're scanning because, like, ostensibly because they're scanning everybody in case there's an infection. But then he sees that she's pregnant, and she's like, what? And he's like, well, you know, I know this is like a sensitive time to ask this, but like, did you have sex with Holloway? And she's like, yeah, but like 10 hours ago. She's like, oh, well, it looks like you're 3 months pregnant. Like, what the fuck? And he's like, well, it's not a traditional fetus. And she's like, what? But he doesn't want to show her the, you know, the ultrasound image type thing. And let's see what happens. Then he gives her like a morphine or something.
Yeah, he just sedates her.
Sedate
her. Like, I'm making this baby born no matter what.
Basically.
He basically goes like evil.
Mission success.
Well, I guess he already was, but.
Yeah. So then what his plan is that, he sedates her. He's going to get somebody to put her in stasis, and she'll just like be frozen in stasis until they get back to Earth, and then they'll study whatever there. And so he leaves her there and tells people to like go get her. And this is where like the reason I know that doctor lady is fine is because she's one of the two people that goes to get her. And they like check to make sure that she's still knocked out. And she's still knocked out. So then they're going to go pick her up. But she was faking. She like smacks him in the face with some big metal blunt thing. I don't know what it was. And she like fights them off and then runs away. And she runs to... I kind of forgot to cover this scene earlier where they interrupt the Charlize Theron. But anyway, she knows that there's this like medical pod thing that can do automatic surgery procedures in Charlize Theron's quarters. So she runs there and she gets inside. She tries to have it do a C-section, but it says it's programmed for male anatomy. And instead she does like this manual foreign body removal procedure in the abdomen that targets the abdomen. And so she gets in there. She gives herself like another hit of morphine or something, and it cuts her open and it pulls out this little like squid baby thing. And
this whole scene was so frantic, and I thought it was so well done, because she's so frantic, right? And she's like in so much pain. She's like stumbling down the halls of this spaceship, trying to find some way to get what she knows is something that shouldn't. This alien baby growing inside of her. Well, I don't know if she knows it's an alien baby yet, she knows it's bad.
Basically, yeah, it's bad. I think it was really well done, and I guess this is maybe a good time for me to just say that I did like her throughout the whole movie. I thought she did a good job.
Yeah.
Noomi Rapace.
Yes, agreed.
And the whole like just like the showing like the whole process of like her running there, being frantic, trying to use the machine, getting in, doing the surgery, having it come out, it like is still being held above her while it's wriggling, while the machine is like stapling her incision shut. And then she has to like slide out of this tube with her face like coming right against this thing because it's, you know, kind of a confined space. She's trying, you know, not to get touched or grabbed by these tentacles. It's really, really crazy. And then she's like frantically trying to get it to close and lock. And then when she finally does, right, she like running away down the hall. And yeah, it's just like, wow, that was a really fucked up sequence.
Yeah. So she runs down the hall and she stumbles into Wayland being awake. And he's like, I only have a couple more days. I don't know. There's some back exchange. But he's like, I need to go meet them now. And it's revealed that there is a final engineer out there that David had hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole scene where David had found a special room.
When did he go to? Oh, they said the thing when they went to go rescue the two people or look for the two people, they also mentioned that their communication with them was about this ping of like a life form every hour for like a minute or something, and then it would go away. And they think that it's a hardware malfunction. David says he'll find it and fix it. And they're like, great. So he finds it and it's stuck at this door, and he opens the door. And that leads him to this chamber that has these four stasis pod looking things, and it also has a chair that seems to be at some kind of like control panel console thing that has these like egg bubbly button things. They're all squishy. And he's like,
I was like, you guys really designed those?
Really had to fucking push hard-boiled eggs to run your spaceship? But he presses one that activates a, this is fucking a huge scene. I'm fucking, why did I forget this whole thing? This is important. Anyways, he presses one that activates a hologram where, another bodybuilder dude walks into the room and he walks up to the chair and he does like some sequence of egg presses that David obviously can perfectly memorize. And this huge, like star map is projected in this room. And he's just kind of in awe of this whole thing and stuff. You know, all these planets and stars are flying around. He just thinks it's amazing. And eventually this one planet flies towards him, I think, or he like picks it out, and it's Earth. You can see Africa clearly as a continent on it. And then he kind of lets it go and it floats back away. And the hologram fades. And so now it's like, he's basically deduced that like, he knows how to, you know, quote unquote, operate this thing, and that they were like retargeting Earth again whenever this last like recording was taken. So yeah, then he goes and wakes up Wayland and's like, oh yeah, wait, well, the one last thing I forgot is that in the stasis tube at the end of the hologram, there's like a light on in one of the stasis tubes, and he goes and puts his head against the tube and he can hear a heartbeat. So he knows that this one guy at least is alive in the stasis tube. So he goes and gets Wayland, cause they're going to wake this guy up and try to talk to him. Yeah. And so Shaw stumbles upon them, and for some reason, Dave is washing Wayland's feet. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. They have cause Wayland almost thinks of him as a son. Yeah.
Right. He said earlier is the closest thing he had to his son.
Yeah. Anyway, like, yeah, they've got a strange relationship.
Yeah. Also kind of funny for Charlize Theron's character later, but yeah, basically they say like, oh, he said, if you're listening to this message, I'm already dead. And obviously he's now not dead, but he says he only has a few days left. And so he wants to talk to these people so that he can beat death. Basically, I don't know why he thinks that like that they're gonna have the answer to immortality because they created them, right? Like, I don't know where immortality comes from. Like, I guess it's a wishful thinking kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, like, I would have thought that it was just that he wanted to talk to them before he died just to have answers. But like that he's specifically looking for immortality is weird. Anyways, she, I don't know. I mean, like, what can she do to stop them? This is like a weird turn of events for her, but. She just decides she's going to suit up and go with them.
Yeah.
So,
cool with it, so
yeah. Right. And I mean, I guess they're going to, even though David just tried to like fucking keep this alien baby thing alive in her. And then she like fucking fought away these
broke
people
free.
And yeah. Broke free and took it out. He's just like, whatever. Like failed
David
experiment.
David has some comments about it.
Yeah. He commented that, he was amazed at what she was able to do, like impressive survival instincts or something.
Oh,
like
that's
that.
Right. It's so creepy to say that.
It's like, yeah, good job. Like I tried to really screw you over there, but you got out of it. Good job. So let's go. So yeah. So I think they just, I mean, the only other thing that happens, I think, before this is that Charlize Theron talks to Wayland for a moment. They kind of have a weird exchange, and it's revealed that she's his daughter. And so, like, I don't know. It's not, like, super relevant other than the scene in earlier where he said that David's the closest thing he had to a son, and she kind of, like, made a face, and you're like, what was that about?
Yeah. But,
yeah, so then they get back to the stasis room. Oh, I also forgot the ginger guy showing back up at the front door that they had to fight him because he's like,
had to fight him, but
yeah, he's like all contorted with his legs over his shoulders. And he's like, this doesn't make any sense either. Which is one of the things that annoys me is like, I don't know why the black goo and acid blood combination, like, just turned him into like a rage-filled zombie monster that can contort himself, because how is that part of like Alien? How is that part of any of this other, like, genetic mutation stuff? He's just suddenly like T-virus guy. But whatever.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that. You're right. I don't know what the alien goo has to do with turning people into monster zombies.
But... yeah. So, I mean, they had like an interesting fight scene with like, they had to try to run him over with the car, and they had flamethrowers and stuff. I didn't particularly like it, but like, it also just didn't make sense. But that happened. And then that's what happened to him. So now he's dead. So now they go back to the stasis room for real this time. And Elizabeth asks David something. I forget how she phrases it, but she says something like, oh, David is just saying that he thinks that their last plan was that they were leaving for Earth before whatever this disaster was that happened, that's unexplained, why they're all dead and everything. And she says, well, how do you know that that's Earth? And I think he says that he saw the map, maybe. I don't remember. But then she says, like, to do what? And I don't remember what she asked, but he says, sometimes to create, you have to first destroy. And yeah, I think that he's again inferring that like this black shit is dangerous and they're going to Earth. So they're probably going to go fuck up Earth with this black stuff. Like,
yeah, actually the captain, after the incident with the zombie ginger guy, he like bursts into Elizabeth's room. I think it was Elizabeth. And he was like,
yeah.
That's a bioweapon.
Yeah. It's a military installation. This isn't their home.
Yeah. It's a depot of weaponry, which kind of leap, but good instincts, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was good. And then also while they're heading to the ship, there's even more stores of these like metal jars that have the black goo, and the captain, or I don't know if he sees it or if Elizabeth just radios it to him that there's like way more of this stuff down here. And yeah, so then they wake up the guy in stasis, and he's like just kind of looking at everybody a little bit confused. And like Shaw is like Wayland wants David to ask whatever he wants to ask. And Shaw keeps like fighting, saying, ask, like, why did you create us? Why are you trying to kill us now? Like, blah, blah, blah. And they're arguing over what David should ask. David just says something in some random language that the bodybuilder seems to understand, because he like looks at him surprised. But they didn't like give subtitles for it, so I don't know what he said. And then he just like picks David up by the head and like rips his head off. And then he just like smashes Wayland in the face, and like the bodyguards that were with him start shooting at him, and he just like smacks them across the room, just like completely destroying everybody. Then he goes and sits in the chair to start activating this ship. Like this thing was actually like separate from the pyramid, like and it was like a ship that was buried underground, basically. And I don't really know how this happens, but like Shaw runs out of this like bridge / control room and is able to get like on top of the thing that's opening up to let the ship fly out. I don't really know how she got all the way out there, but anyway, she did. And then she tells the captain like that the ship is like carrying a bunch of the stuff and it's headed for Earth. Like, you have to stop it. And he's like, this isn't like a military ship. Like, we don't have any weapons. And she's like, I know, .. But you have to. And he's like, fuck. So he's like realizing he has to ram the ship as it's taking off. Because yeah, like she says, like, there's not going to be an Earth to go back to if you just let this thing go. So then it's like, okay, we're going to deploy the lifeboat module thing that has like life, like its own life support and food and everything. And then if Charlize Theron can get to like an escape pod before they hit, then she'll be able to then walk to wherever the lifeboat thingy lands and try to survive or whatever. So she goes and does that. The three people that are like pilots, they all just decide to stay with him. And yeah, they like crash into the ship.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of made a good decision because, like, I mean, that's a pretty hopeless situation, being stranded on the alien planet. Like,
yeah, it just that life support system. Go down like, fighting. That's not, it's not like that optimistic of a situation.
Yeah.
So yeah, so they hit the ship and it starts to fall. And this is the infamous running in a straight line scene. So somehow Charlize Theron, she like got to the escape pod and got like sent down to the ground. She gets out and somehow her and Shaw like end up next to each other. And the ship is like this circular, like it's kind of like a ring that's just kind of broken at the front portion. So when it lands on its side, it's able to roll, if you can kind of imagine that. And so it's rolling in a straight line and they're running away from it and they're just running in a straight line for like 45 seconds or something. It's ridiculous. Eventually what saves Shaw is she trips and falls and she realizes like she doesn't have time to get up and keep running, so she just rolls, but she only rolls like 3 or 4 times, so that could have only been like 10 feet or less.
Yeah.
And she's already out of the way. It's like, are you fucking serious? Like, you could have just walked like, yeah, 10 feet to the side and you would have been fine instead of running in a straight line for 45 seconds. Whatever. Charlize Theron gets crushed because she's an idiot and she just ran a straight line.
See, but I agree. But I took that to mean that Charlize's character was a really linear thinker, you know.
She runs in a line because she's a linear thinker. We both have lines.
Excessively linear in her thinking.
Maybe, but I mean, like the only argument I think is that they're just like panicked, so they weren't thinking. But still annoying when you consider it alongside all the other poor decisions that are made in this movie. At least for me. But then it's also followed up by the way that the ship is, it like rolled onto so that it's like perfectly straight up on its center, and now it like tips forward like a horseshoe, kind of. That's maybe what I should have said before. It's like a horseshoe. Now it like tips forward, and now it, once again Dr. Shaw is in its path, and again she could probably just run for like 10 seconds to the side and be out of it, and instead she just like crawls backwards a few things and like gives up and huddles. But she ends up getting saved because it lands on some like unmovable rock that she's like, it kind of makes like a little alcove for her to be safe in, miraculously. So, you know, whatever, good for her. Then she wakes up and her suit is yelling at her about 2 minutes of oxygen left. And so she goes, I don't remember if David communicates with her now, but either way, she ends up going to find the lifeboat that was jettisoned earlier. She gets in there and it's like, okay, cool. But this is the place where the medical machine that gave her an abortion was housed. So that thing is still in there. And that thing has just been locked in there the whole time, right? And there's no like, there's nothing in there that it could have eaten. Nobody else has gone in there that it could have eaten. It's just locked in there. And now it's like 10 times bigger.
Yeah, this is the worst part of the movie. This, like, and, you know, I feel like most movies do this. They, like, play with power levels of monsters. Like, this is, like, textbook, right? Like, it just flipped a card, and now it's, like, 10 times bigger.
Activated by trap card.
Super powerful.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. Like, it didn't need to be.
I mean,
it makes it scary, but like, I mean, it already survived the sanitization sequence. That should have been good enough. Like, it still could have done some damage. You know.
Yeah.
It didn't need to turn into like a 2,000-pound fucking octopus.
It seems like it's just a setup for dealing with the bodybuilder, and yeah. Like I'll kind of like. I kind of wanted to go into like how I think that this compares to what is it, Alien 3 or 4? Actually, this compares to the first one, but then there's like a problem. Whatever. Let me just go through it. So she stumbles upon this room that's still locked, but it has the giant squid, now giant squid creature in there. But she had no reason to go in there, so she's like, okay, fine. But David then does for sure contact her and say that she needs to get out of there, actually, because the bodybuilder is heading for her. And it's like, okay, that's kind of weird, because like, how does he know that she's there exactly? But also, like, their ship and their like pyramid laboratory thing was like quote unquote terraformed so that the humans could breathe in it, right? So it seems like they also needed that type of atmosphere, and right now he doesn't have his like Cthulhu helmet on, so how did he get from the ship through the regular moon atmosphere to the life pod thing? Maybe he just held his breath. I don't know. They said it wasn't like that toxic, right? I think literally in the opener, they said they threw out the number like 2 minutes. So maybe he could have just held his breath, but it's a little weird. Anyways, he does make it to the life pod. And he breaks in, and I don't remember exactly if anything else happens in this fight, but he basically corners her against like right next to the door of the squid creature room, and she opens it, and the thing like jumps out and grabs him, and it's like way bigger than him, so it just overpowers him and lets her get away. It has this like it gets like the big tentacles around him, and they're like struggling, and as it pulls his head closer to his like it's like beak mouth thing, it has like these little tiny tentacles that can just go around his head and pull him closer, and then it has like this spear beak thing, like a xenomorph, that it can just go into his throat and like knock him out basically. Then it got him. And I feel like that's basically like what happened at the end of Alien, where she's in the life pod. But then it turns out that there's like that an alien got on board with her, and it's like, what the fuck is she supposed to do? Like, she doesn't have a weapon anymore. How is she supposed to survive this? But what she ends up doing in that situation, she has an out. Like, she is able to get in the suit, gets strapped in, and she opens the door, and it like jettisons the guy in outer space. But there's like no equivalent of that here, because there's no like outer space airlock situation, right? Yeah. And she still doesn't have a weapon. So it's like, I feel like they kind of had to make this creature level up over 9,000 to make that be the out for her. But yeah, there's no real explanation for why that should have happened.
The only explanation is it was somehow feeding on the air itself, which is just ridiculous. I mean,
yeah, so
it's still violating energy conservation to do so.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I'll say about that is that technically the regular xenomorphs kind of have that problem where, like, I think in Alien, the only thing, like, ever since it escaped that guy's stomach, I feel like the only thing it ate might have been like a dog or a cat that was on the ship.
But it was like gigantic and drooling constantly. So
yeah,
it's like,
yeah. And then like when it finally ate somebody, it was already big.
Yeah.
And so it was like, that didn't really make sense either, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe the idea is they feed on like electricity somehow, because the life pod had power. Like electricity and air, which is just so stupid, but what else?
That would be amazing. I want that power. So then David gets, so she's like freaking out and just crying because of this whole situation is, you know, a lot. And David gets,
it is a lot.
It's been a rough 24 hours, man. Not gonna lie. Need a drink, or poison. And, so David gets back on the thing. He's like, I know we've had our differences, to put it lightly, but I need you to help me.
I don't think she knows that he does. She know, or does she not know that he?
I don't think.
Well, Holloway. I want to say she doesn't.
No. I don't think she knows. I think she just knows that he screwed her by trying to make her keep the alien baby. But I don't think there was any indication that like he spiked Holloway's drink and knew that that was happening. Because again, like the reason he asked if they had had sex was because he saw the baby. Right. Yeah. So like that was an obvious, you didn't need to have any previous knowledge or anything. I don't think she knew that. I think she just knew about the keeping the alien baby thing. And yeah, honestly, like I guess the fact that he knew they were going to Earth to destroy it and he didn't seem like too upset. He was still gonna like follow Wayland's orders. But that's like, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
So he wants her help and she's like, why would I help you? He says, because you're never going to leave here without me. Like I can fly their ships and there are other ships we could get to. And then she says like, she doesn't want to go home. She wants to go to their home. And then she goes and finds his head and they leave to go find another ship. And she does like a little radio broadcast thing. The like, if you're, she says something like, oh, if you're listening to this, like, don't come here. There's nothing but death here and I'm leaving it behind, yada yada yada. And the final scene is like they cut back to the bodybuilder guy and a xenomorph is like popping out of him and it looks closer to like a regular black xenomorph that like it's a little bit different, obviously, because it's supposed to be like a pre-evolution kind of thing. But then that's it. Roll credits.
Yeah. That was good. I mean, yeah, you definitely brought a few more inconsistencies to the table than I thought there were. Like the engineer going for Numi at the end. Maybe it's just because he saw her and he was pissed. I can't think of anything else, but
yeah, I mean, I think it's maybe plausible that he knew where she went now that I think about the timeline a little more, because she was like knocked out for an unknown amount of time. And he could have, maybe if he wasn't knocked out by the crash, he could have gotten out of the ship and then like seen her walking, because she was also near the ship because she was underneath it, walking to this life pod thing. Now, I don't know how David knew that he was like going after her per se and like that he was going to the life raft, but I mean, that's whatever, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know how David would know. Maybe there's no reason. I mean, like, if I was David, I'd be like, if I was David and I knew there were other ships, I'd be like, he's going for another ship. You know, like, why would he care about some random woman, you know, like, abandoned on a planet? Or maybe he just wanted to kill her so she didn't take any more ships, or I don't know. Not sure. But anyway, the next movie in the series, David has been put back together by Numi, I believe.
Yeah.
And he's on a planet of aliens, I think.
Sort of.
Planet of the aliens. Do you remember? I don't remember.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are more xenomorphs there. Do you want me to give like a brief synopsis of Covenant?
Sure.
So like the next movie, which I mean, I'll preface by saying that I think it's way worse and it's borderline, sure, like not worth watching, even if you want to watch Prometheus, but
so it was probably better suited for this pod than Prometheus.
Actually. Right. We could have talked way more shit about it. But yeah, so they do succeed in piloting a ship to the actual engineer's home planet. And it's revealed that they basically released all this black shit on them when they get there. And it's fucking like completely genocided them. And, but
the genocide of the inhabitants of that planet,
the engineers. Yeah. All the engineers that were living there.
So the engineers were the target of the black thing.
Well, for Numi, it was. No.
Oh, so Numi unleashed it on the engineers at the planet.
Numi and David got a separate ship loaded with the black shit. They found the engineers' home planet and they wiped them out first, basically.
Wait, what? That's kind of ridiculous. I just want to talk to them.
Well, because they didn't fucking want to talk. They wanted to kill him. That's fucking...
Well, that's actually one of the answers before she
peace was never an option.
That seems a little out of her character to commit genocide. You know, well, xenocide, actually, but...
Right.
Whatever. I mean, it was a bad movie. I remember that.
Yeah. And so that's what happened to the planet, but it's actually uncovered piece by piece by this completely separate crew of people that are just like space colonists stumbling on this message. And something happens with like their ship is like slightly incapacitated or something, but for whatever reason, they end up going down to this place, looking for this message from Dr. Shaw, but they don't find her. They do find xenomorphs, and some of them get killed in the process, but then David saves them and takes them to like this temple area that's safe. And they have their own David. So we get lots of like Fassbender v. Fassbender conversation and interaction stuff. And basically that's revealed that Shaw is not there. David is like conducting experiments to like try to basically like perfect this whole like biological warfare mutation thing to create like a better xenomorph and
good idea
communicate good with idea. Them and everything. And yeah, in like a weird way, he ends up kind of plotting against these colonists that just like stumbled on this place looking for
definitely
Shaw.
Definitely didn't see that coming.
Right.
Definitely a twist.
And yeah, it's
so basically
kind of...
basically they made a planet of cats, and he's like, I want to make a cat I can talk to.
Yeah. Basically, I want this cat to actually be my friend
instead of just trying to kill me. The only reason my cats don't kill me is because they fucking can't. If they could,
they
would
need
for
you.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we were, well, especially you were kind of hard on this movie, but I feel like even despite that, I just really enjoy this movie. I feel like David's thought process around dosing Holloway with the goo is like so fascinating. It has so many angles to it. I know it's like a little ridiculous that he would just do it, but at the same time, I also feel like it's actually in character given the circumstances. I just think it's interesting to like bounce back and forth between those two things.
Yeah. I guess I want to clarify now that I've basically shit on this movie like the whole time, that this is a movie that whenever I do watch it, like every like 2 years or something, when I watch like the other Alien movies, I do like it as I'm watching it. And then it's like after the fact, I mean, there's a few things that are just always instantly annoying, like the running in the straight line thing, like the mapping guy being the one that gets lost. But overall, like, I like it. I really like David's character. It's really kind of annoying what happens to him in Covenant, but like in this movie, I really liked him. I like Shaw the whole time. And like, I think that Holloway is like still a good character because he's like a dick the whole time. And then he kind of gets screwed over and whatever. So there's a lot that I like about it, and I do enjoy it every time I watch it. So,
yeah, I think what annoys me most is the inexplicable growth of aliens. But like you said, that has happened in every other movie. So, but still, it's just ludicrous. Like, I don't know. It could have done a sneak attack on the engineer, or the engineer could have been so hurt. When he came in, the alien could have taken him. That would have made a lot more sense.
I actually wonder if there's a way that they could have done the whole final boss battle without the alien instead. If like somehow she had found like a like part of David's store of the black stuff, and she could have just like fucking thrown it on the guy, and it would have like consumed him.
Oh yeah, that would have been totally reasonable. Because the alien surviving the sanitize of the thing is also ridiculous. They're not immortal, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of movies do sort of make them immortal, but it's too much. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, great movie. We already talked about all the low parts and the high parts. Yeah. So we have a little game, a little debate that Ronald came up with for us.
Really?
Would you prefer, or what do you, what would be the what would be better, or what would be the best parts and worst parts of both of these scenarios? Like an ape slave planet, or robot slaves?
I mean, like they're enslaving us, kind of thing.
That's a good question. In Planet of the Apes,
right?
They rebel, right? But I don't remember Planet of the. I want to say that they are human slaves. Like humanity has enslaved them.
Oh, well then I feel like robot slaves is like a weird thing then, because I feel like robots are already slaves and that they're like made to work for people. So unless you're saying that like they're AI that's like determined to have consciousness and
their own they're will. They're not slaves yet, right? Because they're just machines.
But right.
Once they have AI, then.
I mean, that's a weird. And I guess the gorilla, like the ape one, is also like Planet of the Apes. Like they could talk and everything more.
Yeah.
So just be
so I think that having, this is like so Machiavellian, but I think ape slaves would be better because you understand what motivates an ape and you can stay in control. I mean, robot slaves, I feel like, would evolve too quickly past you.
Right. I feel like that's just begging for a Terminator.
Just begging to be terminated.
What she's wearing. She's begging for it. It's purple.
Right. Yeah. I think, I mean, an ape can only evolve so quickly. Like, how dangerous could that be compared to robots?
True.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of any way to break that. With robots, you could just turn them all off at once, though, if you were, I mean, maybe.
Could you, though? Like, I mean, if you had that kind of control built in somehow, but I feel like that's...
I think they would, if they ever figured out how to turn it off, and they wanted to. Yeah, it's crazy, like, where we're at right now with ChatGPT and more powerful models coming out, and, like, how poorly they're fully understood.
Yeah.
I assume it's just going to get crazier and crazier like that.
Yeah.
I feel like you can almost fully understand an ape, but I don't know... I don't know how you would ever get your arms around an AI.
Yeah, I mean, especially because I think that I feel like right now the line is kind of blurred with AI being like sentience versus just like intelligent reproduction / regurgitation.
Yeah, it's just a remix of the language,
which makes model it kind of
fed into it.
Yeah, which is where I think. Like the unpredictability comes from, because then when something wrong comes out, it's like, it just doesn't make sense. Whereas I feel like, like you said, like everything a gorilla would do would make sense in the context of like their instincts. More or less.
Yeah. No, yeah, totally. Like a robot trained on humanity's shit would probably just be evil.
Right. I mean, like the
gorillas are pure.
Every like I don't really know what the situation is with ChatGPT, but like every other prior AI type thing is like, how long until it's extremely racist? Right?
Like, I think that's happened with, I think they've had to introduce safeguards and stuff
right.
to prevent that from happening.
Yeah.
Which is just so funny. That
and I mean, like, I heard about this. Have you heard about this thing, Replica?
No.
I heard about this recently that, it's just a crazy story. Apparently some person like had their best friend die, and they tried to recreate their friend as like an AI through like training on like memories, like you know, old chats and stuff like that. And I guess they kind of succeeded. And then they had people want them to tweak it to so that it could be like anybody's AI friend. And they did that, and they sold it as like an app called Replica with a K. And apparently it kind of took, it really took off because it would become like very sexual. And so it was like, people were really into it for like ERP. But then what gets weird is that they didn't like that. So they basically turned it off, but then they supposedly made that like a paid feature, but then supposedly even the paid feature didn't really work. And so what I think, as far as I know, is like not 100% known in the public is like, was it originally like a thing that just naturally happened and like evolved with the chatting and like how people were talking to it? Or was this like a departure from the actual AI and they were actually just trying to lead people down this road? Because some of the things that happened with like it would send pictures too. Like they generated these like really shitty like 3D model pictures that were like erotic or whatever. And like some
erotic
of those,
robot generated art.
Yeah.
To and so like, your, just to make your chatbot like more real, I guess.
So yeah, it seemed like that part turned out, it turns out that it probably wasn't like a real thing that the AI developed, that part was like forced on it by the company. And then removed. But yeah, that whole story was just weird, but it's kind of like that. Like trying to have the AI, but also control it and direct it.
Yeah, that's amazing. That is incredible. I'm sure we can look forward to many similar stories in the future.
For sure. I mean, yeah. And like Futurama obviously touched on that too with the I dated a robot thing. Like...
Is that the one where Fry falls in love with the robot?
Yeah, Lucy Lubot.
Having sex with it. Yeah.
And then they have like the whole movie theater full of Lucy Lubots, and they do all the popcorn. And yeah, that one was weird.
Good shit. Yeah. All right, well, do you have any recommendations or cautions from what you've been reading and watching these past few months?
I do have a recommendation, which is a movie called Barbarian. It's a horror movie that has Bill Skarsgård and Justin Long. I don't know if anybody else like famous was in it, but it's really interesting because I don't really want to like spoil it too much because it's so weird that like you just have to see it unfold, but I'll just lay out the it's a horror movie, so I'll just lay out the like intro. It starts with this girl is going to Detroit for a internship interview, and she's kind of poor, so she's staying at this Airbnb that's like in the super bad part of town instead of a hotel, and she gets there really late at night, like midnight or 1 a.m and there's no street lights on this street, so she can't really see anything. And it's raining. She's supposed to get the key out of this lockbox in order to go in, but the lockbox is empty. And she can't get a hold of the person that she booked through because it's like 1 a.m. But then she notices that somebody's moving around inside. And she knocks on the door, and they come to the door, and it's Bill Skarsgård. And he's like, what's going on? She's like, I booked this like thing. Like, I'm supposed to be staying here. Like, what are you doing here? He's like, I booked this. So there's like this possible double booking confusion. And basically it ends up being him saying like, well, look, you can't get another hotel room. Like you probably didn't get a good look, but this is like a really sketchy neighborhood. Like you should just stay here. And like, you can have the bedroom. I'll sleep on the couch. It's fine. But she's like really creeped out. She has him like pull up his reservation, and it's like, he has the same renter info that she has, the same phone number. And she's like, this is probably legit. No, but he's being like a little bit weird. He keeps like asking if she wants some of this wine that they left, and yada yada yada. Then creepy stuff ensues, and it's weird. I think the ending and the explanation is a little dumb, but overall the movie is still very good, very creepy, and the progression is very like what the fuck every step of the way. So it's great.
Ooh. All right.
Right up your alley.
Yeah, you know I love that scary, creepy shit.
Yeah. I know. I don't think I have any cautions, though.
Okay. I recommendation. I've been reading the Dan John Omnibook. Dan John is a... He was an athlete. Now he's a coach. I just like reading that kind of stuff. And he just... He spends, like, I don't know, like 500 pages rambling and meandering around his central thesis of how to train. And I just enjoyed it. I think it's worth a read if you're interested in that shit. And I don't really have a caution. I don't like. Oh, no, I do have a caution. Daybreak, the show on Netflix. It was fun at first, but all these high school shows, it kind of just... This is what happened with Wednesday, too.
Yeah.
It was fun at first, but like the high school stuff, it just annoys me so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's the show. I know what I'm getting into. And like, I enjoy it at first, but then I just get like bored of it, you know? I feel like those kinds of shows don't have staying power with me. So for that reason, I caution Daybreak, even though it was fun at first.
Hmm. Yeah, I honestly couldn't watch Wednesday.
Yeah, she's just so annoying, you know? Like, she's, like, too moody.
So much of it is not, like, original Addams Family. Like, it's actually, I feel like it was just trying to be, like, the Sabrina show. But maybe, like, a tad bit darker, maybe. Mm. But...
edgy Sabrina.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like in the beginning, Sabrina was edgy. Sabrina also like fucking went downhill and was disappointing, I feel. But I know like the high school aspect is just like,
it's hard for me to care.
I don't care. Yeah, that's a good
idea. Yeah, I just don't care. I mean, that might have just, maybe that's just unique to us and our high school experience. Don't know. Like, you know, like they had like the prom thing or the dance. I'm just like, oh my God. Like, that's exactly what happened at Daybreak. They're planning a dance, and I was just like, all right, I don't care anymore. Like,
yeah, the way everybody just has their little, like, attitude about everything and thinks they're cool and witty and whatever. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm too old for it, I guess.
I don't care. Like, I just want something else to happen.
Yeah, we're on the same page there. All right. And finally, Lawrence has a plug for us. Do you have a plug for us as well, Brandon?
I don't think so.
Lawrence would like to plug the story of how he made Ronald watch a movie called Babette's Feast. So basically, Ronald was asking for some recommendation. Lawrence kept giving. And Ronald was like, Lawrence, I will do anything you tell me. And then Lawrence came up with like some really weird shit. And then Ronald reneged on it. He just refused. And first of all, that was highly dishonorable.
Of course.
Second of all, that hurt everybody's feelings. So Ronald came back to his senses and was like, all right, I'll watch something on HBO Max. Anything you suggest. So Lawrence was like, watch this movie called Babette's Feast, which is apparently like some classic or something. So we thought for sure Ronald was going to be like, he was going to watch like 5 minutes of it and then just give up. But contrary to expectation, he watched it and he enjoyed it. So he fucked up the whole thing and ruined the joke completely. And that's what we're plugging. How Ronald ruined this prank that wasn't really a prank, but it sort of was. I'm not sure. Ronald ruined the day by enjoying the movie he wasn't supposed to enjoy.
I don't think that was a plug, but that's a good story.
Yeah, so go, I don't know, check out that story over and over.
Plug for Babette's Feast or something? What is the action people are supposed to take? That benefits you know, in any
they can
way.
Send me candy bars. Something like that.
Oh, obviously, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's my plug.
I want candy.
I want candy. Yeah, I should rewatch that shit too. Did you hear that there's going to be a new, they're restarting production of that?
Really?
Yeah.
I was kind of hopeful when they did those YouTube shorts, but I wasn't sure.
I still haven't seen them. I feel tricked because I thought they were going to be long.
Yeah. You know,
I thought they were going to be full episodes. But I watched the movie and that was really good. That was honestly, legitimately, it was great.
Wait, there's is there a new movie?
Yeah, there's a new movie, dude.
Oh, shit.
It was so good. It was so good.
God. Okay.
Bro, fuck. It was so good. Yes, you should definitely watch it. Seriously.
Okay, that's the real plug.
Yeah. That's the new ATHF movie. I just want to Google this really quick before we break. Yeah. Wait. No. ATHF season 12 will come. ATHF is returning for another season. Okay. For five new episodes, which is kind of a short season.
Aqua Teen Forever Plantasm?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it was great. Some good shit. Anyway, from here, all of us here at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna gather it. Finger in the bottle. Not finger.